It's time for Lunch Hour Reviews.
He was licking me.
What?
He was licking me!
This man paid till he burst.
I'm painting me.
It's feeding time.
I'm Mindy.
And I'm Darren. And we are the Rants Macabre, a part of the Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about the network, including other programs, how to follow the show, and find past episodes of The Rants Macabre, please visit fangoria.com.
So this week's Lunch Hour Review, we were actually able to go see Green Room before it came out. It's coming out limited release in the U.S. on April 15th and then wide release at the end of the month, I think the 29th of April. So we, luckily, we get press passes like we're like real people or something. And it's really exciting.
Real reporters. Which,
yeah, we're
again,
like real serious reporters.
It's a knock at the people.
But there we were amongst other reporters watching Green Room. It was written and directed by Jeremy Saulnier. You would know him from 2007. He did Murder Party. And then what I knew him from was The Killer Speaks, the Mad Max episode.
We talked about that on our Serial Killers episode. And I guess in terms of production, that was probably the most compelling one.
Yeah, it's the one that stands out the most. Well, I don't know if it was because it was New York why I remember that one so well. Or...
Yeah, and the sort of severity and the timeline. It was stretched over 2 days, but I don't know.
So he got a good one.
Jeremy made it. Dynamic.
Absolutely. So he also released Blue Ruin in 2013, which, like, have you seen?
I haven't seen
it. I haven't seen it either, but now I want to. After watching Green Room, I kind of want to check out every single thing.
Yes.
This film stars Anton Yelchin, who I knew him from Odd Thomas and then the Star Trek movies.
And you did like the remake of Fright Night.
Oh, and he was in the remake of Fright Night, yeah.
A little bit. Yeah, I guess him and Imogen Poots.
Yeah.
We're both in the Fright Night remake
it's
with Colin Farrell.
It's such an unfortunate name. She's a really good actor, and she's really pretty.
She's
but
great in this.
It's a really unfortunate last name. It's that.
It also stars Aaliyah Shawkat, who is maybe from Arrested Development, and she was great in The Final Girls. And our heavy is Patrick Stewart, who's been all over the marketing.
I was sitting in my house in West Oxfordshire. Couldn't be more different than where we are right now. And I settled down on a Saturday evening, read the script. I found it to be a page-turner. And it scared the shit out of me. I was alone in my house. At some point in the story, I poured a large scotch Picasso. It was so unsettling. That sense of being in a situation surrounded by people you can't reason with. If it does this to me, then you know, when it's on screen, this might really have a lot of impact.
This will be over soon, gentlemen.
So the story follows the Ain't Rights, a Virginia, D.C.-based band like Fugazi or Minor Threat before them. And they're touring the Pacific Northwest a long way from home.
Mm-hmm.
They're living hand to mouth, one show at a time, siphoning gas out of random cards and sleeping on fans' couches. If their outer appearance is that of junkies, it's because they are. Life for them has been distilled down to one thing, playing music. Everything will be all right if they can just get to the next gig. So when an important show falls through and they would essentially be stranded on the wrong side of the country, they take a detour show off the beaten path.
All right. I can get you guys a solid gig. Matinee tomorrow. Doors at 1. You guys are on at 3.
And they're told it's a skinhead venue, but be cool. Don't talk politics. Play the show, get your money, and get out.
It's decent money, too. They get $350 for that show.
Yeah, although, I mean... Yeah, it's them sort of making the best of a bad situation.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting, and I talk about it a little bit later in my notes, but the dynamic of like, there aren't those many genres of music specifically that are known for having like a racist subgenre, like, you know, and
well,
so skinheads and hardcore punk.
Yeah, they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Because I'm a fan of Irish pop punk or Irish punk kind of stuff, Irish music, which doesn't go hand in hand with skinheads, but kind of sometimes goes hand in hand with like kind of racist dudes. So you have to you know, watch out for that. And certain metal shows that I'll go to, even in New York, you'll occasionally show up some skinheads, and you're like, oh, okay, just keep an eye over there because you never know what they're going to do.
Yeah. So the language in the movie, so much of it is lingo. Like, this is a very specific story, mm-hmm. and the lingo doesn't ever get dumbed down for the layman.
No.
Which made it a little tricky for me. There were a couple of passes that I had no idea what was going on. Like, I kind of, you know, I'm familiar somewhat with punk terminology, but there were things like laces and braces that got...
Well, that's specific to skinheads.
Right, and I knew the laces element, that like the colored laces, specifically the red laces, were supposed to be symbolic of you having killed someone. Which, I mean, way to tip off the cops, guys. Right. The secret is out.
Yeah.
But yeah, moments like that, it's sort of representative of how insular this story is and how insular the community is. In interviews, Saul Neer has talked about growing up in Washington, D.C., saying there were Nazi punks at every single big show in D.C. As a result, he said, there were stabbings outside the clubs, and I felt way out of my depth, but it stuck with me. It's for good reason this story feels so specific. It's a very specific experience in an exclusive setting.
Yeah. Hardcore is a very closed-off group, and if you're into hardcore, you know it forward and backward, but if you're on the outside, you're not really peeking in. I mean, unfortunately, because of where I grew up and just, you know, being in specific, you know, places growing up, that's why I knew about Laces and Braces. Mm. I know about, you know, people who have Confederate flags right in their garage, right out on their yard.
When the Amorites get to the venue, we see why it's so important that the community stays in the fringes. It's a small compound, essentially,
mm-hmm. yeah.
with swastikas graffitied on the walls, where there are already Confederate flags hanging. And I was thinking, can you imagine the locations people trying to set design that place? And it's awkward enough, like, writing that shit on the walls, but then, like, when it's a wrap and it's time to, like, take all that shit down, you burn that building down.
Yeah, you're
right?
Like,
you're
what,
just
what
done
kind of
with
movie
it.
Were these people making? You're the set dresser, and you're like, let me find teeny tiny, like, shot glasses with Confederate flags or something, you know? And you have to go out to the stores to find these
you have
items.
A yard sale in Mississippi trying to get rid of all your Confederate flags.
Exactly.
So a huge element of the movie, naturally, is the music.
Mm-hmm.
This is a hardcore band, and I was thinking that there's sort of a gambit in wanting to play hardcore punk. It is such an extreme genre,
mm-hmm.
it's immediately polarizing.
Yes.
I never got deep into hardcore. I love Rancid, and they go in and out between hardcore and punk, but I only, you know, sort of from a distance appreciate the social commentary of bands like Minor Threat and Black Flag, but I always like what those guys did after they kind of evolved into like Fugazi evolved.
Sure.
Hardcore, as a complete rejection of social, even musical norms, prioritizes energy above all, and I think the movie actually plays a very fine line of not alienating your sort of average moviegoer like me. So I thought it was kind of funny that when they're trying to communicate the sort of euphoria the band feels when they're finally on stage playing music,
right.
it sort of slows down to this like ethereal soundscape, slow motion. They've, you know, hit their groove and they are
They've won the audience over.
Yeah, and it's funny that they start off with a little bit of a fuck you to the crowd.
Right.
Which again, like with the punk terminology and the sort of very specific music references, I only got that they were pissing off the audience because they were like flicking cigarettes and throwing bottles
and shit.
And I kind of assumed, I couldn't make out most of the lyrics.
Oh.
I assumed it was like a Bad Brain song or something that might have been, hey, like we don't like black punk groups or something like that. But it turns out it was a Dead Kennedy song.
Yeah. I know the song because they'll play it at clubs, at music venues in New York, if skinheads are in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when I saw a show at St. Vitus, a metal, it was like a mathcore show, there were a few skinheads, and they played it before the set, the house DJ guy did. So that's and I've heard it a couple times, and only because, like, skinheads show up.
Oh, that's funny. It's like a protest song. It's like an on-the-spot protest song.
Well, it's like to say, I see you.
Right.
And we know you're there.
And that is kind of
maybe what it's about.
It's the only inch of territory, and it's kind of funny that in terms of this band, they have been disempowered with this show cancellation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to make up for it, they have to go way off the beaten path. And they are greeted by, like, unfriendly faces.
Yeah.
And even the, like, inter-band play, I really liked Anton Yelchin and Aaliyah Shelcott's back and forth, where she kind of teases them that, like, you know, don't fuck up on me or I'll tell them you're Jewish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's their one opportunity to kind of assert themselves and go, like, this is our fucking stage. Go fuck yourselves.
Right.
That said, they do win over the crowd in time.
Of course. So this movie is all about the music. It's really the music bases and moves this movie forward. And so I wanted to look a little bit about hardcore, because when you are not a hardcore fan, if you say anything out of place, hardcore fans will put you in your place immediately. And it's a very dangerous, like, road to travel.
Not unlike horror fans.
Exactly. Not unlike horror fans. And the problem is, and why I never really got into it, is because hardcore comes in the 80s when punk and new wave really start taking over. And hardcore is like, I don't like that. I want to do my own thing. I want to be cooler than they hate new wave, kind of a thing.
Okay.
And I love new wave, so that's where I went wrong, apparently.
It is kind of funny. Specifically, the movie's poster, the main poster they're going with, is a reference to The Clash's London Calling and the bassist smashing his fender down on the stage. It's a, you know, it's an album cover. It's a classic punk image. Clash aren't hardcore.
Exactly. And hardcore guys, those early punk guys, even something like Sex Pistols, the hardcore guys are like, that's lame.
Right.
That's like baby times kind of a thing. I really love, there's a scene in this movie where they all have to pick their desert island band. And they, for the interview, so they're giving this interview in the film, and they choose like the most obscure shit, and like, except for the one kid who chooses like dance, or he chooses Misfits, not dancing. He chooses Misfits.
Right.
And so he's like,
I've heard of the Cro-Mags.
Like, yeah, but it's like they're trying to be like,
yeah, they're trying to impress the reporter.
Exactly.
To, yeah.
And, you know, when the shit hits the fan, then you find out maybe they wouldn't have chose something quite like that.
It's like a trust fall.
Exactly.
Of band.
Exactly. What would you choose?
In terms of like a band whose catalog, I would have everything.
Yeah, you get everything.
Oh, Christ. I mean, if I get to have everything, then I guess the Beatles, because that's an impressive body of work that I won't get bored with.
That's fine. I would choose David Bowie.
Because
also,
a good pick.
Like, on a really that's sad a day, then I could even listen to the Labyrinth soundtrack.
I kind of regret picking the Beatles.
Yeah, David Bowie has, like, quite a lot. I could even listen to, you know, what is that, Tin Machine? Yeah, I would listen to that. Fine. I don't care. Something kind of interesting, though. So hardcore is like anti-music, essentially, is kind of the big idea. And one thing that they love to do, and I never really understood it, but then I kind of get why they do it. Hardcore loves to, instead of like regular like power chords, a lot of times they'll do root, fifth, and octave, and they leave out the third of the chord.
Okay.
And honestly, there's no more hardcore kind of a thing than to do parallel fifths. Like Bach would hate parallel fifths, so... Hardcore is like really anti-Bach.
Of all the things that that Bach would hate, yeah.
He would hate those parallel fifths. But they leave out the thirds, so that way you don't exactly know what key you're in. Because a lot of times the melody will be in a minor key.
It's generous to call a lot of those melodies.
Right. So then you leave out the fifth and it's really like,
but I guess even the intonation
ambiguous.
Of the vocals lends to like a lot of blurring of what key is this in?
Exactly. So you leave out the third and you kind of, it's even more kind of ambiguous. So I thought that was kind of interesting and like, you know, very hardcore. It was very anti-Bach. For me, like I just never listened to it. Occasionally, like I would listen to Meshuggah, which is metal though, you know, and then maybe like the hardest core thing I would ever listen to is Dillinger, you know, Dillinger Escape Plan. And that's again, not really hardcore. So.
Yeah, I like Refused a lot. They're a Swedish hardcore band, but their best stuff is not poppy, but like it's got some powerful riffs.
Yeah.
And hardcore couldn't give a fuck about riffs or, you know, melodies.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't help but adore her. It's Mindy's Music Corner.
No, I don't know. I thought it was really a great movie, but it was really fucking loud. Didn't you think it was so loud?
No.
You didn't think it was loud?
In all honesty, I'm kind of losing my hearing.
Oh, all right. Well,
it's really pissing Rachel off.
It was really loud to me. And I kept thinking to myself, like, because we were surrounded by, like, older reporter people. And I was just like, they probably hate this even more than me about this loud fucking music.
The commercials do have to give away a certain amount to sort of entice the viewers to, like, the tension and the sort of pivotal moment happens after the show. They are packing up their shit. Aaliyah Shawkat has left her cell phone in the green room where the headliner, Cowcatcher, is. And when Anton Yelchin volunteers, he's the sort of the last one in the procession carrying gear, he pops in, grabs the phone, sees a young girl with a fucking knife in her head.
Yes.
And kind of panics, with the phone in hand, starts dialing 911 and tries to get the hell out of there. Everyone pounces. They shove the band back in the room. And so now
it's a standoff.
Okay, I'm with the Ain't Rights from Washington, D.C. You guys are hard to find. Want no social media presence?
The music is shared live. It's time and aggression. You got to be there.
Sorry, guys. Got to clear out. Follow me.
And then it's over. Holy shit.
I told you to follow me.
Stop! No!
You can't keep us here. You got to let us go.
We're not keeping you. You're just staying.
We're so fucking dead, guys.
What do we do? Oh, shit.
This will be over soon, gentlemen.
What are they doing?
They're coming.
We gotta go.
And we die.
How long can we wait?
For sure that is.
Is that a pep talk? Just grab some shit, get ready to run.
Here we go.
I see the bad moon horizon. I see trouble on the way.
They're everywhere!
You breathing? Let him bleed.
Careful now.
I can't die here.
So don't.
It's fucking hard, man.
So the movie goes from there in terms of these standoff moments and showdowns and then gauntlet scenarios where they're really trying to figure it, like, you know, they're fucking teenagers. Some of these kids, I mean, are probably still in their teens. You know, these are not action heroes.
No, but there's a great, like, honesty that they approach the situation with.
Mm.
And that sometimes when things get really, really rough and shitty, there's such honesty, which a lot of times in movies, you expect some sort of pretense and some, like, bravado.
Yeah.
And these guys are kind of like, no, I'm just going to make a run for it. And occasionally, you know, and I think that's
so
great.
Many horror movies and even action movies kind of transition to, like, and now your protagonist is a Navy SEAL. Oh, we never told you that.
Right.
But they're a badass.
Oh, they know Kung Fu.
Right. But here,
they don't know Kung Fu.
And I think the setting off moment when they are sort of fooled into opening the door is so violent and so graphic and so straightforward. If it wasn't a tense situation where you've got these out-of-towners at a neo-Nazi punk venue, now, like, things have turned gory, shocking, straightforward violence. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't even need to be exaggerated. Because the visuals are so impactful.
Yeah, I was thinking, I'm sitting there watching the movie. I'm in the screening room. And I think, like, at first I was like, this is good. It's very tense. It's very tense. But why am I here? Like, why did they call the Rance Macabre to come watch this? And then when they do open that door for the first time, I go, oh, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm here. Actually, out loud, I think I said, fuck, like that, maybe.
I was biting my knuckles. Like, I was trying to keep my shit together. It was pretty wild.
Yeah.
That's the kind of, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. I kind of want to talk about the idea of calling this a horror movie, mm-hmm. which, I mean, frankly, it isn't.
But horrific things happen.
There are a lot of those.
Yeah, yeah.
The special effects work is flawless.
Yeah.
And the camera work, I think, adds a lot to that. And so does the music, frankly. I did notice that there wasn't really a moment where the music came up to sort of telegraph a moment of violence or expectation. It is just stark and brutal.
Right. And I would say, like, that was like the old man in me or whatever, because it was so loud in the theater. But then you really appreciated the moments of silence.
Yeah.
You know, because there wasn't a lot of score that went along with that film. It was really just hardcore song after hardcore song. And then silence when you're trying to regroup and figure out what the hell's going on.
Yeah. And the cinematography was calm and showed a lot of polish. For a movie like this, considering the subject matter, I think you're like, knee-jerk reaction would be to film it with a lot of kinetic shaky cam.
Yeah, make it dirty.
And it's not that. Like, this is such a, like, every shot is deliberate. You are getting to see what the director wants you to see. I was really impressed that, like,
the
it
editing
wasn't
is
indulgent.
Awesome.
It was great. Yeah. So let's talk about the idea of calling this a horror movie.
Okay.
I've been thinking that horror is, especially lately, we recently reviewed The Invitation, which I love, I'm not apologetic for, but I would hesitate to call it a straightforward horror movie. It's a suspense movie, like you said, with horror elements.
Right.
Horrifying elements.
Yeah, horrific things happen.
And so I think horror lately has been used more as a marketing safety net. But at the same time, in all fairness, it's kind of the only place these kinds of suspense movies will get a fair shake. I think any other genre title, and people are going to say it's too violent, it's too bloody, etc. Mm-hmm. But horror fans, having the expectation of blood and gore, are prepared for all that. So it won't take us out of the experience.
Right. I mean, it does, though, occasionally when I am expecting that stuff and I don't get it for 30, 40 minutes. It does make me say sometimes, like, why did I get this screener occasionally? I mean, and I've enjoyed, like, almost every single movie that we've ever gotten. You know, it's just,
we've been pretty lucky.
And I think, like, a part of me needs to grow up and quit being such a bitch and say, let them say their horror. It is horror. Horrific elements happen, because I give special cases to something like The Guest, which is not horror. It really is a thriller. But I think of it as horror because we're talking about Adam Wingard. We're talking about some of the same actors that we normally see in horror. And that's kind of what makes it be horror to me, if you know what I'm saying. So I put that in that camp, and I can't make exceptions for one movie and not for another. So I need to just say, fine, you know. I guess I need to just give up. Because also, you know, These Final Hours is another film that's not a horror film, but horrific things happen, and so I do consider it almost a horror film because of horror elements.
That was the Australian end of the world movie. I don't remember what episode we talked about it, but we both loved it.
Yeah.
And again,
so I can't make an exception for that and not for others. So I have to be fair and say, like, fine, it's all horror.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, I don't know, at this point, horror is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, I kind of think it is. And I think, like, there's something about horror from 2010 on that's going to be, because people now know that to say something is horror isn't going to, number one, theaters are still going to play it. It's not going to blacklist it. You're still going to get reviewed, things like that. So I think it's a lot safer to call something horror nowadays. And you're right about marketing it, you know, and using it to drum up some audience.
Yeah.
That makes sense as well.
I mean, there's no more committed movie fan than a horror fan.
Exactly. So yeah. I think horror in this day and age needs to be a little more open. Or at least, I mean, to say the horror fans, which I am very guilty of it, need to be a little more, I think, open-minded about it. And say, all right. Fine, it's all horror. Fine. If horrific things happen, it's horror. Yes.
That's it for Green Room. I was trying to think of similar movies that cover similar territory. There's American History X from 1998 with Edward Norton playing a neo-Nazi who sees the error of his ways.
Yes.
And Curb Stomping.
Yes, you cannot forget about that. That's
a horror element.
A horror element for sure. Horrific thing that happened
The sound design on that moment was fucking brutal. Wow. And then I was thinking, in terms of wrong place, wrong time horror, that it's funny, you mentioned earlier today that is so often a theme in horror movies, mm-hmm. in terms of like stumbling upon something. But really, in terms of like the perfect storm of wrong place, wrong time, there was one that came to mind, and this is a little bit of a stretch, but Race with the Devil in 1975 with Peter Fonda, and him and his friends are doing a cross-country trip in an RV, mm-hmm. and they come upon Satan worshipers who are sacrificing, you know, a young virgin woman or what have you. When they realize Peter Fonda and company are there, it becomes a sort of chase down cross-country terror ride.
Yeah.
That one is one to check out. So this is a music-heavy episode, and again, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention I have an album on Fangoria's music label.
Get it!
And one of the tracks has Mindy singing. I would say it is the album highlight. Sure. No, of course. It absolutely is. So yes, the album is called Apophenia. The name that I go by is my first middle name, Darren Ty. It's on iTunes. It's on Apple Music. It should be on Amazon and Spotify, if not now, soon. Pick it up. It's also at the Fangoria website, where you can find it the cheapest of all for $3. What a bargain.
It's great music to write to, too.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The first 13 tracks are instrumental. So, yeah, it's sort of good accompanying music. We're on social media. We are at Rant Macabre on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We have an email if you want to get in touch with us and let us know what we got wrong about the hardcore genre.
Nicely, though, please. And I'm not opening any sort of like white power shit. So leave that.
Well, we are therantsmacabre@gmail.com. And yeah, we're also on Stitcher and iTunes. Drop us a review if you would.
You've been listening to The Rants Macabre, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Darren Rosario and Thomas DeFeo, and executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about The Rants Macabre, contact Ken at fangoria.com.
This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks.